From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Stewart took affirmative steps to conceal the conversation from prison guards, making extraneous comments in English to mask the Arabic conversation between Brockman and Yousry.
This will be a very good fight. I think we can make the government put up or shut up here, and I don't think they can put up.
Civil rights attorney Lynn Stewart is indicted for supporting terrorism by Attorney General John Ashcroft. She'll join us live in our Firehouse studio. Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres denounces Israel's operation in Jenin as a massacre. Is it the Sabra and Shatila of the Second Intifada? And across the world, from Nablus to New Mexico, activists are rising up against the Israeli military invasions of the occupied territories. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The massacre is continuing in Jenin refugee camp, with reports ranging from 100 to 300 Palestinians killed while defending their home from Israeli helicopter rockets, tank shells, and ground troops. Israeli troops are not allowing any ambulances into the area, and the Israeli military censor is controlling Associated Press news reports from the area. 13 Israeli soldiers were also killed yesterday when Palestinian fighters counterattacked. Within hours of the Israeli deaths, Ariel Sharon said in a broadcast to the nation that Israel's military onslaught would continue until the Palestinian militias are, quote, crushed. Israel's Haaretz newspaper reports that Foreign Minister Shimon Peres is calling what happened in Jenin a massacre. And Israeli Defense Force officers said because of the dangers, the soldiers are almost not advancing on foot. The bulldozers are simply shaving the homes and causing terrible destruction. When the world sees the pictures of what we've done there, it will do us immense damage. He said, however many wanted men we kill in the refugee camp and however much the terror infrastructure we expose and destroy there, there is still no justification for causing such great destruction. A hospital doctor says the refugees have no water or food. Children are getting sick from drinking sewage water. This news from Jerusalem. A suicide bomber blew up a crowded bus near Haifa during morning rush hour today, killing at least 8 people and wounding 14 others. An Armenian monk has been shot and seriously wounded in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. The monk was trying to take water into the church. Israeli military sources say it appears he was shot when an Israeli sniper tried to hit a Palestinian man standing next to him. Germany is suspending arms sales to Israel to protest its invasion of the West Bank. Germany is Israel's most steadfast supporter in Europe. Germany's also drafting a new peace plan, which calls for withdrawal of Israeli troops, an early declaration of a Palestinian state, an end to Jewish settlements in Palestinian areas, and phased talks on Israel's borders and the status of Jerusalem. It also provides for international peacekeepers patrolling a buffer zone between Israel and the Palestinian areas. The United Nations, the U.S., the European Union, and Russia issued a joint statement today urging Israel to withdraw from Palestinian territories and for an immediate ceasefire. The appeal came after U.S. Secretary of State General Colin Powell met with U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan, the Russian foreign minister, the EU foreign and security chiefs, and Spain's foreign minister in Madrid. General Powell said in Cairo yesterday he is planning to meet with Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. Powell's Cairo visit was preceded by thousands of Egyptians protesting U.S. support for Israel. Police killed one university student and injured dozens. The clash occurred when thousands of students of the University of Alexandria left campus to march into a U.S. cultural center. This, according to protesters. The Yemeni president is urging Israel's neighboring countries to let Yemeni troops in to fight with the Palestinians. But Yemeni security forces have been cracking down on tens of thousands of protesters, stopping them from marching to the British consulate and the U.S. and Egyptian embassies. Lebanon's Hezbollah says it's seized an Israeli army post in a disputed border area today, destroying a Merkava tank after the troops deserted under heavy shelling. The guerrillas planted Hezbollah's flag there and dedicated the attacks to, quote, heroic knights fighting and standing firm at the Jenin camp in the old city of Nablus and those besieged at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. Meanwhile, 15,000 residents and Palestinian refugees marched in the northern Lebanese town of Halba. 5,000 rallied in Sidon, and 1,000 students staged a sit-in at American University of Beirut. Jordan claims that over 100 policemen had been heard in confrontations with protesters. Nearly 400 demonstrations have been held since Israel invaded the West Bank 2 weeks ago. On Sunday, a 10-year-old Palestinian boy died of injuries sustained in the Baqa refugee camp where police were breaking up a demonstration. In Bahrain, riot police fired tear gas today to break up a pro-Palestinian protest by 2,000 schoolchildren that was heading for the U.S. Embassy in Manama. In Indonesia, thousands of people marched the local legislative assembly building in a western province. Nearly 300 South African Jews are condemning the Israeli invasion of the West Bank. A spokesperson for the Not In My Name group says the Israeli assault is threatening to draw the entire region into all-out war and is calling for the Israeli military to withdraw. Meanwhile, a group of 128 U.S. intellectuals have sent a letter to European counterparts calling for, quote, a sane and frank European criticism of the Bush administration's war policy. The letter challenges the framing of the war as a struggle between good and evil and President George Bush's explanation for anti-U.S. sentiments. It was conceived as a response to an earlier letter defending the war on terrorism signed by 60 American intellectuals, which recently received wide publicity in European newspapers. Signers include Edward Herman, Howard Zinn, Gore Vidal, anti-nuclear activist Helen Caldicott, and international lawyer Francis Boyle. And this news from Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. British forces revealed yesterday that commando teams have secretly been taking part in combat missions in Afghanistan. Britain leads an international peacekeeping force in Kabul, but Britain is expected to hand over leadership to Turkey and begin flying in hundreds of commandos this month to help to track down remnants of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. On Tuesday, Britain's Guardian newspaper reported Britain had already started to take part in some combat operations in eastern Afghanistan. Peace Chorale, Jean Lee, here on Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Jenin is a city of the dead. That's how a 14-year-old Palestinian boy recently described his home to a Times of London reporter. In the last 2 days, reports of horrific violence and human rights abuses have been seeping out of Jenin. There are stories of soldiers using the elderly as human shields, of women and children being rounded up, of men being shot in the head, execution style, and of missiles falling like rain. The Associated Press is reporting the Israeli government is censoring reports on Jenin, and Israeli forces are not allowing ambulances into the camp, so there's no confirmed body count available. Estimates range anywhere from 100 to 300 Palestinians have been killed. Yesterday, 13 Israeli reserve soldiers were killed there. According to the Israeli Haaretz newspaper, their deaths bring the number of Israelis killed in Jenin to 23. The Haaretz also reports Foreign Minister Shimon Peres is privately referring to the killing in Jenin as a massacre. We turn now to Kamel Jaber. He is a Jenin citizen whose home overlooks the refugee camp. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Welcome.
It's good to have you with us. Can you describe what is happening now?
Now, in this current moment, the situation in the refugee camp is very tense, is very ambiguous, because the Israeli occupying forces, till now, demolishing houses and capturing many innocent people. And there is some rumors which must be based on some testimonies by the people who came from the refugee camp this morning, that some people were killed by the Israelis with cold blood. Yeah, from this morning. After a night of fighting between the Israeli occupying forces and the defenders and the resistors of the refugee camp, the Israeli forces ordered the people, the civilians in the refugee camp to leave the refugee camp. From this morning, I saw many columns of old women, young women, and children. Most of them were baited, exhausted, tired, hungry, afraid. Yeah, came from the hill of the refugee camp. Yeah. Now the people gathered here in a charitable society headquarters, yeah, and there are more than 200 people, yeah, and they distributed the population, the civilian population of the refugee camp, distributed around Jenin, around the city of Jenin, in many places. Here near my apartment, we have 200 women, young women, old women, and children. The situation in the refugee camp is very horrified, as they termed the situation during the last week. Many people were killed, many people were injured, and bleeding to death. I do believe that more than 200 people were killed in the refugee camp. It is a new massacre. It is a massacre. It is a it is perpetrated by the Israeli occupying forces, which is termed by the West media as a democratic state in the virtual Middle East here.
We're talking to Kamel Jaber, who is a Jenin citizen. His home overlooks the Jenin refugee camp. According to Israel's Haaretz newspaper, the foreign minister, Sharon Peres, is calling the killing of the Palestinians in Jenin a massacre. Does this come as a surprise to you?
He called the killing here as a massacre. It is true. It is true, and it came from a pharmacy spokesman in the Israeli government. It is a massacre. It is a massacre. It is a massacre which was perpetrated by the Israeli occupying forces by a decision from Sharon government.
Right now, it is very difficult to get information out of Jenin. Is there electricity in the camp?
No. There is no electricity in the camp. There is no water. As the people who came this morning to the city of Jenin, believe me, without exaggeration, and I am an objective one, and I do stress on the fact that the woman told me that many young people and young children drank the water of sewage. Yeah, there is no electricity, there is no water, running water, and here in Jenin City, yeah, we have no electricity since 8 days ago, and we have no running water also.
So,
and the Israeli copters, Apache copters, which was made by the United States of America, and the United States of America supplies Israel with these formidable machine of war, before 5 minutes, one of these copters fired on the people here in Jenin, in spite the people are not moving in the streets, but one friend of mine, he is a doctor, contacted me and told me that his child with his child 9 years old was injured in his legs, yeah, and he is bleeding, yeah.
In addition to Kamel Jabbar, Jenin citizen, reporting to us from Jenin, right, overlooking the Jenin refugee camp, we're joined by Ali, who is a Palestinian from a village next to Jenin, speaking to us from inside Yasser Arafat's compound. Can you tell us if what's happening there, and as you hear about the report from Jenin, where you are, what's happening with your family? What have you heard?
Okay, I'm saying hello all of you now. Just I don't have any information, you know, about Jenin, because there's no lines, there's no phone lines, and there's no electricity there. I'm trying to call my family since 7 days, 1 week, and I don't get any line. The situation is so bad here. We don't have water, we don't have enough food, and but I can't tell you more. I'm listening just to the information from this young boy who's speaking with you from Jenin. You know, I don't know all this information, but I can describe what's going on there in Jenin. In a few words, I just can say that the Israeli army doing the same thing that Hitler do in Auschwitz in Poland. It's a city, you know. He do the same thing in Jenin, you know. And it's very, very ugly thing what he is doing in Jenin and in the whole Palestine land, you know.
Ali, can you describe where you are right now?
I'm now in Arafat Palace, and I'm sitting here, you know, outside a lot of tanks and a lot of soldiers, and sometimes there's a shooting outside, and this is the situation.
So you're one of the people who came in with the international solidarity movement activists last weekend into Arafat's compound and haven't left?
No. I'm a Palestinian soldier. I came to Ramallah for 3 months, and when the Israeli army attacked Ramallah, I thought in my mind that the most safety place for me, it will be Arafat's palace. So I came here, and You know, I stay here, and we can't go outside, so I stay here.
And so you are there, though, with the solidarity activists are also there.
Sorry, again?
The people from outside of Palestine who have come from Ireland and from the United States are also there.
Yeah, they are very nice people and very kind, and they help us, you know, because if they will not be here, I'm sure that the Israeli soldiers will attack us here inside, you know. And I think they help us a lot, you know.
Are you speaking with Arafat?
Not all the time, you know. He coming to us one time in every day, you know, and he look if everything go okay, you know, and not all the time, you know. He's tired and he's an old man, and what I can tell you more.
How many of you are inside the compound?
Something like 215 people.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you would like to say to the American people from inside Yasser Arafat's compound as a person who has your family in Jenin right now?
Oh, I have many things to say, but let me say something that I'm sure that the U.S. Government, President Bush want to make something, I'm sure that he can, you know. He do a lot of things everywhere, and I want him to stop all these attacks, Israeli attacks, to to our cities, you know, and to stop to send guns and all this stuff to the Israeli army because they use it against us. You understand me? And
well, Ali, I want to thank you for being with us again, speaking to him on a cell phone inside Yasser Arafat's compound, speaking in Jenin to Kamel Jaber. We have to break for stations to identify themselves. We'll go to a reporter who's been covering the area, and then Lynn Stewart will be joining us, the attorney who has just been indicted for terrorism by the U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft. Stay with us.
I'm gonna stay on the battlefield. I'm gonna stay on the battlefield. I'm gonna stay on the battlefield till I
had come into the city carrying life in my eyes amid rumors of death, calling out to everyone who would listen, it is time to move us all into another century, time for freedom and racial... And
you are listening to Sweet Honey in the Rock. I'm Amy Goodman. We go now to Saeed Ghazali, who is a Palestinian journalist and translator for Justin Hugler, who is a reporter with the Independent newspaper. He's in Jerusalem right now, has been covering the Jenin camp. The latest report we have from Saeed Ghazali and Justin Hugler, their piece begins, "The sound of four explosions came down the phone line. A woman could be heard screaming in the background, 'Come and save us.' This was in the middle of an interview with a Red Crescent ambulance official. He said the woman's house had been hit by rockets fired from an Israeli helicopter. These were the voices that came out of Jenin refugee camp yesterday when it came under the heaviest attack since the Israeli army began its onslaught in the West Bank. The accounts are chilling stories of Israeli forces using the elderly as human shields in front of their tanks, of women and children being rounded up, of homes being demolished, of bodies littering the streets. These allegations cannot be confirmed because of the censorship imposed by the Israeli authorities, who have refused journalists access to the camp. They're the claims made by those inside the refugee camp, speaking by mobile phone, and those who have recently fled. Abu Hussein, a 55-year-old man inside the camp, said, 'They use women and old men as human shields. They were walking in front of the tanks and a bulldozer was destroying the houses on both sides. Apparently the houses were bulldozed to clear a path for tanks through the narrow alleys, an old tactic of Ariel Sharon when he was commander of the army in the Gaza Strip in the 70s. Saeed Ghazali, can you describe more about what you're learning about what's happening in Jenin right now?
Well, what's going on in Jenin is terrible, but it is still unconfirmed. And according to reports from the camp this morning, the situation is very bad. I was speaking with a fighter 3 hours ago, and he was just telling me that three of his colleagues were killed, and seven others waiting for death. And I spoke also with other people. They said the Israeli army are executing Palestinian gunmen and militants, especially from Hamas, after they've been captured. You know, this is the Israelis also are digging huge holes in the ground. And they are dumping people who get killed, and also they are evacuating, demolishing too many houses, clearing the camp, and dismissing people outside of the camp. These reports are still unconfirmed, as Israelis are not letting for the international media to go inside the camp or inside Jenin even. And from yesterday until now, many journalists tried to reach Jenin and were unable to make it.
We're talking with Saeed Ghazali, who is a Palestinian journalist who is trying to cover Jenin refugee camp. What is your estimate of how many people have died there?
Well, it is difficult also to determine how many people died there. Initial reports spoke about 150 killed and hundreds wounded. But, you know, this neither the Red Cross nor Crescent could confirm that, because they were they cannot go inside the camp. I heard today the director of the Red Cross, director of Red Cross in Jenin, making an apology to the Palestinian people, because his crews were unable to enter the camp and evacuate the wounded people. So the picture is really unclear. And there is a blackout. The Israelis should let the media and also medical teams get inside the camp and see what's going on. This is a massacre. I believe it.
Saeed Ghazali, it is very tough for us to get information in print from Jenin. Can you talk about the Israeli military censors that we're seeing now referred to, for example, on Associated Press, but almost no coverage of the fact that the reports are now going through Israeli state authorities that come out to the rest of the world?
Well, you see, they began this censorship weeks ago. They put a lot of restrictions on foreign media and local Palestinian journalists. I was one of those journalists whose ID card, a press card, being withdrawn for no reason. However, I stayed 5 days in Ramallah when the Israelis invaded the city. And one of my colleagues, who is an American journalist, Anthony Shadid, he's a correspondent for the Boston Globe, was shot in his shoulder, and I had to drag him, his blood on my body. I had to drag him for more than 50 yards, shouting for help, and until some Israeli soldiers. One of them pointed his gun against us, and I had to show him his blood before they give him first aid. This is a criminal. The Israeli censorship do not want the world to know about their atrocities against the Palestinian people, and this is not going to help the Israelis at all. This offensive committed by the Israeli army will lead to more suicide bombings. Palestinian people are very angry, and not only Palestinian people, but also the whole Arab and Islamic world are very angry now. They are mad at the Israelis and their crimes.
We're talking to Saeed Ghazali, who is a Palestinian journalist. You said your credentials have been revoked. Why? And what does this mean for international reporters? You're not alone. Palestinian reporters working with international reporters finding themselves clamped down on even more than the internationalists.
Listen, and I'll tell you something. You know, I am a reporter for more than 20 years. I am a reporter for the Associated Press. I work for the Associated Press for more than 9 years. And my credential, the Israelis discovered recently that I am a security risk. After 20 years, after more than two decades working as a journalist for the foreign media and for many American journalists, American newspapers, they discovered that I am a security risk. This is not true. This is in order to prevent the world and the media to know what's going on here in the Palestinian occupied territories.
Final words about what is going on in Jenin right now. Were you surprised to hear the Foreign Minister, Shimon Peres, talk about the Jenin refugee camp, the killings there, a massacre?
No, I am not surprised. I want to tell you that the Palestinians declare tomorrow as a day of heroism and massacre. Yes, it is action. It is heroic action by few fighters. Not more than few hundreds, have challenged hundreds of tanks, thousands of Israeli soldiers. They're using Apaches. They're using their criminal tanks and turrets, dropping bombs on the civilians and the Palestinians in the refugee camp. This is unjust. The whole world should understand that this is a crime against the humanity. I don't understand why the Israelis are losing their mind and doing these atrocities against our people.
Do you think Colin Powell coming tomorrow night, Thursday night, to Israel will make a difference?
I don't think so, because I tell you why. If Colin is coming here to tell the Israelis you should withdraw from the Palestinian land, and the international community has to put the pressure on Israel and bring here observers or international forces to make a separation. Enough is enough. We should not live under the control of Israel. They committed massacres against us. Enough is enough. It should be stopped. And Colin and Bush has always supporting Israel, has always taking the sides of the Israelis. And these suicide bombings the Palestinians committed is a crime too. I don't agree with it. But the world has to understand that the Palestinians are in a hopeless situation. It is the weapon of the weak.
Saeed Ghazali, I want to thank you for joining us from Jerusalem. He has been reporting for many international news agencies. The Israeli military has pulled his credentials, his latest pieces for the Independent of London, along with Justin Hugler. We will come back to you in the coming days. You are listening to Democracy Now! In a minute, we'll be joined by Lynn Stewart. She is the first person to be charged under the USA Patriot Act. Press conference was held by John Ashcroft in New York yesterday, the U.S. Attorney General announcing she is being indicted for terrorism. She is the lawyer for Sheikh Omar Abdurrahman, and she will be joining us. But before we go to her, we go to Nablus, to Beth Daoud, who has reports of what is happening in that West Bank town. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you so much. Before I start telling you about Nablus, I really want to encourage all of the listeners now, please, this is very critical here, what I am seeing. Do not rely on U.S. Sources of media, because what they are telling you is very distorted and it's very wrong. This is the third time I've been here, and it's just a critical situation. I encourage you to get online and go through Al Jazeera if you've got satellite. Listen to Al Jazeera, or just type in Middle East, and you'll find ways to get news in a different way. But what I've heard, what I've seen, is just it's just absolutely a tragedy for the Palestinians. Today I went around with the ambulance drivers. We attempted to get to injured people. Babies are being delivered on people's living room floors. It's just unbelievable what is happening to the Palestinians here.
Beth Daoud is speaking to us from Nablus. She is from Colorado, the Colorado Campaign for Middle East Peace and the International Solidarity Movement, one of the activists who have gone to the occupied territories to bear witness. Can you talk about foreigners like yourself who are attempting to travel with a medical emergency personnel and ambulances?
Yes. Right now, there are six internationals here with the International Solidarity Movement. There's three from the U.S., two from the U.K., and one from Ireland. And we are basically being used as human shields so the ambulance drivers can get into areas. Up until a couple days ago, people were lying in the streets dead or dying, and the Israeli soldiers would not allow anyone to get near to them. They were shooting at the ambulance drivers. They were stopping them and making them completely strip in the street. They revoked the doctor I was with and the ambulance driver I was with today. They were two that were stripped and their credentials taken away, and they still have not received them back. But what the internationals are trying to do right now is just let our presence be known here, so the Israelis know that there are people here, and if they continue this, I mean, there's witnesses here that we are going to be telling the world about what is happening.
Beth Daoud, the issue of the Israeli military saying that any foreigners in ambulances will be shot, when was that announcement made?
It was yesterday morning. We made it to the Rafidiya Hospital in Nablus, and that's when we got into the ambulances, and the ambulance drivers told us at that time that they were in communication with the Israeli soldiers, and that's what they told the ambulance drivers yesterday. But we got in anyway because we have to get into these areas. We have to stop this massacre. And you know, the six of us it's a dangerous situation, but the world has got to know about what is happening to the Palestinians. It is absolutely heartbreaking and tragic. I can't even find the words to tell people what is happening, but just please start finding other sources of news to listen to understand what is happening here.
On the issue of getting into Jenin, where it is not clear if what we're seeing is the next Sabra and Shatila, but at least 100, perhaps 300 Palestinians have been killed so far, people dead in the streets. Can you get there?
Well, I'm thinking maybe in the next couple of days we're going to attempt to get in. Probably the same way we got into Nablus, which we didn't get in through the checkpoint. Of course, we were turned away. They don't want any witnesses. But we actually had to go over hills and through rocks and past settlements to make it to Nablus. And that's probably how we're going to get into Jenin. We feel a real urgency to get in there. And there's, as I speak, there are internationals coming into Israel and Palestine in defense of the Palestinians. And we're going to do whatever we can to try to help the Palestinians.
You wrote, the day before yesterday, Israelis took an elderly man hostage and used him as a shield when they attacked a mosque. The mosque was being used as a temporary hospital. The soldiers put a gun to his neck, marched them in front while they stormed the building. Another instant, ambulances stopped, people forced to get out. The soldiers then wrote dog on a man's head. These are things you personally have witnessed?
These are things I've heard through the doctors of Rafidiya Hospital. Through a Reuters journalist actually saw this this incident about the dog being written on their head and their arms. This is from reputable people. I just heard so many stories. I can't hardly put it into words what is happening here.
And the French journalist you heard about being operated on, who was wearing a bulletproof vest, shot anyway.
Yes, this was yesterday, and I actually talked to the surgeon that operated on him. There's a French journalist from Channel 5. He was out doing what he was doing, trying to get pictures, and he stepped out of the car, and the Israelis deliberately targeted him and shot him. He was shot in the chest, but because he had a bulletproof vest, it stopped within a few millimeters. The surgeon even showed us the bullet that came out of his chest. So it's really, the Israelis, it's absolutely, they do not want witnesses in here. They do not want pictures of what is happening because it's a massacre. It's an absolute massacre.
How many people would you estimate are dead in Nablus?
Well, I just spoke to the ambulance driver and the doctor, and there are, in the last 7 days, 65 Palestinians have been murdered and 150 injured. And some of these people we saw coming right in the hospital, missing their hands, their faces completely almost burned off. I mean, horrible, horrible stories. Children that have been shot in the head. These are just civilians. This is not an operation about rooting out terrorism. This is just massacre. This is terrorism. Absolutely.
Beth Daoud speaking to us from Nablus. She is with the Colorado Campaign for Middle East Peace and the International Solidarity Movement. I want to thank you for being with us. When we come back from our break, we go to Lynn Stewart. She has just been indicted by U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft on charges of terrorism. She is a civil rights attorney. Stay with us.
Courts of law make us all feel like defendants sometimes. If we want freedom, we've got to amend it on our way down. There's nobody left to crown, be it ever so humble. There's no place like home. Home, home on the range, with the fear and the antidotes play. Where seldom is heard an encouraging word, and our leaders do nothing all day.
Richie Havens, No One Left to Crown. Here on Democracy Now!, Breaking the Sound Barrier, I'm Amy Goodman. The Justice Department on Tuesday indicted a leading civil rights attorney on charges of supporting terrorism. Attorney General John Ashcroft accused Manhattan attorney Lynn Stewart and her translator and two others of helping her client, Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, deliver messages from his Minnesota prison cell to his followers in Egypt.
Stewart took affirmative steps to conceal the conversation from prison guards, making extraneous comments in English to mask the Arabic conversation between Rahman and Yousry.
This will be a very good fight. I think we can make the government put up or shut up here, and I don't think they can put up.
That was John Ashcroft, followed by Lynn Stewart, who joins us now in our Firehouse studio. In 1995, Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman was convicted of masterminding the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and plotting to attack the UN and Lincoln and Holland tunnels, sentenced to life in prison. 2 years later, barred from sending or receiving written or recorded messages of any kind from his prison cell. If his lawyers wanted to meet him, they had to pledge to discuss only legal matters. According to the U.S. Attorney General, Lynn Stewart broke the rule by helping Rahman deliver coded messages to the members of his organization in Egypt. Ashcroft says she allowed a translator to read and reply to letters sent by Rahman's followers. Ashcroft claims some of these letters advocated the resumption of military operations in Egypt. The attorney general could not cite a single specific terrorist attack that resulted from these communications, but he called them very important signaling to the Islamic group, that is Omar Abdulrahman's group. Lynn Stewart, her translator, two others face possible sentences of 5 to 20 years. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Lynn
Stewart. Thank you, Amy. Very nice to be here.
Well, yesterday, in fact, you were just meters down the road in the federal courthouse being indicted. Can you respond to these charges?
Well, I think that they're clearly an attack upon the entire concept of defending people in this country. One of the most important things is the sanctity of the attorney-client and the fact that a client can speak openly to his lawyer, whereas that lawyer is then bound not to repeat it. Clearly, Ashcroft, as in so many things, wants to ignore this, ignore the whole way the system operates, which is not without its flaws, of course, but wants to intrude upon the communication between attorney and client. He wants to do away with it. He wants to make the government a third party to all of these communications.
Did this come as a surprise to you, this indictment yesterday?
It actually did. The incidents that they're talking about occurred almost 2 years ago. They were fully discussed with Pat Fitzgerald, who was the leading terrorist U.S. attorney at that time. And I was permitted to go back and visit Sheikh Omar after this press conference with this secret message. And, of course, that is part of our defense also, that it's hardly secret when you hold a press conference, you fully discuss it. It's clearly a message to people that politically the sheikh was not in agreement with what they were doing. It has nothing to do with signals and terror and what have you. The sheikh is a political, religious leader of great importance to the Egyptian struggle. And I know that there are many people in your audience that don't agree with this, but to me, this struggle is equally important to the Palestinian one. The Egypt is the largest country, one of the closest allies of America. Mubarak has had a complete tyrannical rule there. He has thousands of people in jail being tortured. So my view was the sheikh has the right to communicate. And on this, where I was asked by my client to do this, I did what every good lawyer would do. I did what the client asked.
And what was that? What is it that you said?
Basically, it was a press release that he dictated. We released it to the press. They then called me to confirm it was real, that it was not I'm not even sure of this, but I believe it was a Reuters reporter that called to authenticate it, as of course all reporters do. I authenticated it, and it went out. It was basically a statement that was something about, you have laid down your arms, and the jails are still full. They are still being arrested. Nothing whatsoever has happened. Maybe you should reconsider this. Although he went on to say, I'm not there. I don't know. I only get what I hear on the radio. So, you know, but this is my opinion of what is going on.
And they charged that you had broken the SAMs, the special administrative measures that would prevent you from having your client communicate through you.
Right. Well, the SAMs are in place to completely silence the sheikh, to keep him from being a force in the world today. They quantify things as terrorist, and therefore everybody bows down and says, yes, we must conquer this. But the fact of the matter is there is a distinction between political and terror. There is a distinction between, I always use this example. The Irish Republican Army, everybody believed, was a terrorist organization. Many of their people were held in jails in the United States. They were free completely to communicate. Gerry Adams was not arrested when he came to this country. It was a different struggle, and because there was support for it in this country, they did not dare to trample with it. Here, because they are able to rally support against it, because those people are different, they are able to repress all of what would be purely political statements. The sheikh is in his 60s. He's diabetic. He's blind. He has a bad heart. But he is an inspirational force, and that is what they try to conquer.
What about the attorney general's charges that you used your time with him to allow the translator to communicate with him, speaking Arabic, to communicate messages and to get messages out, and that you deliberately would speak English over them to throw off the prison guards that was going on?
Well, first of all, I'll say two things. The first thing, which I said yesterday, is what were they doing there? Why are they listening in? Why am I saying we can't let the prison guards? If I say that, I haven't seen the tape. I've personally denied this categorically. We handled our meetings the way we handled them, as we have a right to do, attorney-client. We were discussing many, many issues. We had very limited time because all of these trips were made not on the government paying, not anybody pay. We paid for these out of our own pocket to go visit the sheikh. So we had limited time. We used that time very wisely. It will come out at the trial exactly how this took place and what took place, if anything. But I think the thing that people ought to focus on is, why is the government there listening to everything we say? This is supposed to be a communication between attorney and client, not between attorney-client and the government.
And they say they have tapes of these conversations?
They say they taped it, and we haven't seen them yet. But I've represented many people who have said in U.S. courts, I am guilty of no crime. And I say this to you, I am guilty of no crime whatsoever.
We are talking to Lynn Stewart. She has been charged along with three followers of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman charged with conspiracy to, is it conspiracy to commit terror?
It is, or to aid and abet, I think.
in representing her client, Sheikh Omar Abdurrahman, who is currently in lockdown, a blind diabetic housed 24 hours a day in a federal prison in Rochester, Minnesota. There have been a number of things that have been said. I was amazed to turn on David Letterman last night and to see his guest, John Ashcroft.
Did he sing?
I didn't catch that part, but I did catch the part where Ashcroft talked about your case, talked about indicting you, and ultimately David Letterman clapped, applauded the attorney general. Now, yesterday, it was a very different scene in the federal courthouse, which was packed, standing room only, with attorneys in the city who were standing up for your right as an attorney to represent your client. What about this issue of the USA Patriot Act? Are you the first to be charged under it?
Well, I don't really keep track. I don't know that. I assume some of the poor people that are being held incommunicado in the various prisons, Muslims all, may be charged under it as well. I don't know that. But I'm certainly the first to be very publicly charged under it. And I think, you know, the media last night, I think John Mitchell was also on. Not a person that one would think of Lynn Stewart allying herself with. And yet I understand from people who saw the program that he said this case is a United States Supreme Court case because this is a frontal assault on the way defense lawyers deal with clients. And if the government is to be permitted on this case to intercede, to become a third party in those communications, our whole system of defending people, the accusatory system, is under frontal attack. And that's why every lawyer supports not me, but what they are charging me with and how they have gone about getting these charges.
Lynn Stewart, you've been released on $500,000 personal recognizant bond while the bond was set at $750,000 for your translator. And the third person being held is held without bail.
That's correct.
What does this mean to say you're out on a personal recognizance bond?
My three children signed for me. Means I can't travel out of the southern and eastern districts of New York, meaning some fairly upstate and all of Long Island. It also means that, most importantly, that now I am completely out of contact with Sheikh Omar. Of course, he still has a call a week to Ramsey Clark, who continues, and Abdin Jabara. They continue to represent him along with me. But it means that he is even more cut off, and without the translator has also been forbidden to communicate with him. So therefore, there is no translator, since he was the only one they ever approved. So he is even more out of the loop now.
What about your office? What about your other clients? What about your files?
Well, apparently, contemporaneously with my arrest, they moved into my office and... I can't say that they did a search and destroy. They certainly did a very, very thorough search. They were there till 6 o'clock last night. They went through everything in my office. I don't exactly keep things in shopping bags, but it's close. You know, it's a busy law office. We have lots and lots of cases. They basically went through every file, every desk drawer, every everything. They took personal address books. They took the Rolodex of all the current clients. They took a Rolodex which has like every expert we've ever used.
Now, these are federal cases. The people who are taking your documents are the ones that you are representing them against. So they have your... all of your information, the personal information of your clients.
Exactly. Well, Susan Tipograph, who represented me yesterday in front of the judge, made a special point of getting the judge to place on the record, at least, that the government would not go through these files. They would seize them, and of course, to some degree, have gone through them already. But whatever they seized would be held, not under seal, but held aside until a special master can be appointed to go through to make sure that they are not. They said, and excuse the expression, they erected a Chinese wall, meaning the attorney, U.S. attorneys who are present at the search, or the FBI who was present at the search, are only for the purpose of search. They're not for the purpose of prosecution. So therefore, they are somehow exempted from being malignant on this situation. But the fact is, my clients, and I thought as I sat in this little jail cell yesterday waiting to be called out, This really is also something that could just bust a career. I mean, I'm no spring chicken here, but I still have many clients and many people who want to be defended by me. But I would think if it were me, do I really want to be defended by a lawyer who has charges against her herself that the government is mad at? So in a sense, it certainly puts a pall upon my representation of people, and I'm going to have to go to every client and say, you've heard about this, or if you haven't heard, I'll tell you about it. Are you sure that you want me to continue representing them? And I assume some will say, no, I can't be in that position. I want a lawyer the government likes.
We are sitting with Lynn Stewart. She is the attorney for Sheikh Abdurrahman, who is in a Rochester prison. She has just been charged with terrorism by the U.S. Attorney General's office, out on a personal recognizance bond of $500,000. When does this trial take place?
Well, apparently they have used FISA, which is the darling of prosecutors. It's a foreign intelligence surveillance. It was used also against the woman in the Pentagon who allegedly passed secret information. It's a blanket thing. They listen to every call of everyone. They get approval from one judge. And apparently they have had FISAs on Mr. Ustri's phone. He's the interpreter. Mr. Sattar's phone, and fax and computer. And apparently there's thousands and thousands of conversations. So they will not get us the so-called discovery. That is the paperwork involved here for 8 weeks. They won't have anything for 8 weeks. So we will wait and we will see what they have.
Ed John Ashcroft has talked about this as a sort of chance to relaunch the issue of this is why we will be recording conversations between clients, attorneys, and their clients, and using this as an example that this is what can go on in these conversations. What about the charge that you put out false information saying that the sheikh was being denied medicine in the prison?
I categorically deny that. I have absolutely, I mean, I, it could be I'm getting old and fuzzy here, but I don't remember ever putting out anything.
And they said,
I
believe that they have tape of the conversation that you had with someone planning how you would put out the misinformation.
I categorically deny this. I mean, they'll show it to us, I assume, if they have a tape, but I just can't imagine myself doing such a thing.
But he uses to justify taping client-attorney conversations. What does this mean for attorneys in this country? What does this mean, more importantly, for clients, for people who are being represented?
Well, what underlies the attorney-client relationship is the notion that a client feels that he can speak freely to his lawyer, that the lawyer is sacredly bound not to reveal what he says to anyone. And if we are now to have the government as the third ear, people will not be forthcoming. It will be impossible to defend people if you don't know what their position is on a matter. We are entrusted with this. And to take away that trust that exists between the attorney and client means that it will become exactly what he wants them to become, the military tribunals that he worked so hard to get. And it will become that way for all criminal defendants, not just for people that are on Guantanamo Bay. And that is the thing we are going to fight here. And I think the entire defense bar, present in court yesterday and who have called, I can't tell you, I have received calls from people I haven't heard from in 10 years that say, anything I can do, I'll lick stamps, I'll do anything. And I think that's the kind of support we're going to get.
Well, Lynn Stewart, I want to thank you very much for being with us. She has been charged with terrorism by the Attorney General of the United States. By the way, we just got word that there's going to be a nonviolent civil disobedience outside the State Department tomorrow, called by Professor Cornel West and Rabbi Michael Lerner, protesting what's happening in the occupied territories. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Miranda Kennedy, Lizzie Ratner, Anthony Sullen, our music maester and engineer. You can email us at mail@democracynow.org. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Democracy Now!